Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about isolating incidents. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight and every other Wednesday night, I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. I also wanted to take a moment to thank you all for your donations. We are getting closer, but still need your help. Every share, donation, and comment of support helps. Let's keep building this together. Go to helpchilling.org. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Dirk Stevens is myself, Paul J. McSorley, and Melissa Medina. Now get your ticket ready. Take your seat in our theater of the minds and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by Dirk Stevens and performed by Paul J. McSorley and Melissa Medina. In it, we hear a malevolent masterpiece about a father and daughter from the Emerald Isle. Now, without further ado, I present to you, Faram Bimi Finn.
Maggie, I hobble closer to help if I can. Me little Maggie, already doing a man's work. I shift me weight unto me injured foot. Pain flashes up me leg and I lean back against me crutch. It's my own fault and it isn't right. I should have been more careful loading the cart. I should have tied the horse before stacking the grain. But I got in a hurry. And now it'd be Maggie that pays the price. It ain't fair. Did you pack enough food, lass?
Ah, Dad.
She heaves the gate open and slings her pack over her shoulder.
You're worse than an old hen, I swear. I'm not a little girl anymore.
I stamp my crutch on the ground. And a good shepherdess ya be, too. But this ain't like watching them in the meadow out back of the barn. I want to be there to help. It shouldn't be her. I should have sons to do this. Strong boys. Not her. Not my sweet Maggie. Do you remember the way?
Aye, she huffs as she picks up her staff. I've been to the Bothy 1,000 times before. Quit your worrying.
Her words sting like a slap to the face. I'm being overprotective. I know it. But I can't help it. She's a good girl, strong and sharp as a whip to boot. But she's my daughter, my only child. I can't help it. If you need anything, you know the Lowry lads be running their cattle in the next glen over. They're good boys. She's known them since she was knee-high to a toadstool. They won't cause her any trouble. I nod. They're good lads. They'll look after her. She won't be alone. Not really. She turns her head, peers at me from under her flaming red hair, and tears swell in her emerald eyes. Before I know what's happening, she's got me in her arms.
I'm sorry, Dad. I love you.
Something sticks in the back of my throat as I stroke her hair. I love you too, Maggie. Take care and come home safe. Her warm lips press against me cheek.
I will. That's a promise.
Her hands slip from me back as she turns and walks away. Then, raising her hand to her lips, she sings out for the sheep in the old Gaelic.
Faram be me fin.
The sheep know her voice and hurry to follow. I watch her go, singing along under my breath, but in the new tongue. Where I will be is where my hope lies. A tear burns me eye. She stops atop the rise. She raises her arm and with one last wave vanishes over the hill. Me Maggie, off to summer pasture. Every year she combs and helps me spin the wool. But this time, I won't be there to do the shearing. I won't be there to cook her supper. Hear her sweet voice. I stomp me crutch, straining to hear her call, but all I can make out is the wind in the heather, the chickens squabbling over grain. With a long sigh, I glance down at me game foot. Come on, then. Maggie'll break the other if she finds we ain't healed while she's been gone. Slowly, ever so slowly, I hobble back toward the hut for a sit-down. Just for a little while. McGregor said he'd drop in later. If I'm lucky, maybe I can get him to stop by the old one's hovel and buy me a poultice. The thought sends a smile worming up me cheeks. Aye, wouldn't that be a shock for little Maggie? Her game old da, striding across the glen to lend a hand. The smile shrinks as quick as it came. Her magic ain't free. I don't know what she'd ask in return.
Maggie, I reach the top of the hill and stop. I need one last look to home before I'm gone. The barn and fence, the stones I help gather from the fields, the thatched roof, grass I cut for the repair last spring, our wee house and Dad. My chin shakes as I wave goodbye, but he's too far away to see it, too far to notice the tear that leaks down my cheek. I know he's worried about me, but I understand. He loves me. We've never been apart for so long before, and I know it pains him greatly. He raises his crutch in final farewell, and I lower my arm. Come, lassies, I whisper as I turn away. But he doesn't know how badly I need this. The chance to prove to him that I can do the work, that I can look after him when he's old, that I can be the daughter he deserves, that Ma being gone doesn't mean he's on his own. I'm not a little girl anymore, not a child. I'm ready to lend a hand when need be. And it's more than that. Dad's always been there, always strong. When Ma took ill, I could see the worry crushing down on him like a millstone. But he never complained, never wavered, like a lighthouse in the storm. I need to prove that I'm worthy of all that, not just to him, but to myself, too. The sheep call out as I move along, letting me know they're with me. All lambs I raised by hand, they're more than sheep. Each has a name and character all her own. I know which ewes are like to stray and which the rest will follow. I know when to approach the ram, when not to turn my back, and when to leave him be. No, they're not just sheep. They're so much more. Nearly clan. I run a finger along the sling wrapped tight around the top of my staff, and I know how to protect my clan. It takes most of the day to reach the summer pasture. The sheep cause me no trouble, but it's a long, dry hike into the highlands. Once they hear the falls, once the smell of water reaches them, they run past, eager to reach the burn. They belly up along the banks, pushing and shoving like traders at the market. Ugh, I laugh. You're daft, every one of you. The burn won't run dry. But I make no move to stop them. This is their home as much as it is mine. Theirs and their mother's, back for 1,000 generations, probably. I move past them, upstream to the very pool of the falls, and kneel down to drink. I dip my hands in the cool, clear water, glance up at the veil of white spilling over the rocks, and lift the water to my lips. It's not much, only a trickle, really, but it's never run dry. Taking another drink, I splash the rest over my face and watch the sheep, thirst-quenched, toddle off into the field to graze. Birds call, wind dances over the grass, the sun lays warm on my cheek, and as the falls sing their sweet lullaby, all is peace. I sigh, slip the pack from my shoulders, unlace my boots, and dip my feet into the water. I love it here. I always have. Flopping down on my back, I watch the clouds drift by and smile. Blue sky. I stretch my arms over my head just to feel the grass against my skin. If I had my way, I'd never leave. I don't know how long I lay there, but as the light fades, I know it's time to move along. It's not easy to pull my feet from the pool, to stuff them back into my boots and take up my pack again. But it's not for long now. Cupping my hands around my mouth, I sing, "Fadam be me fin." One by one, the sheep lift their heads from the grass to answer, "Fadam be me fin." I call once more, and they come running. I lead them along the base of the cliffs, into the little gorge where the bathy sits, and the pens behind. I hold open the gate and count them all as they waddle in, full of grass and thick with wool. The last ewe, the oldest, saunters into the middle of the gate, stops, and tips her head to one side. "Meh, get in there, ye," I laugh and give her a push with my foot. "I know it's hot, but tomorrow I'll start the shearing, not today." I close the gate behind her, fasten it shut with a cord, and head inside the bathy to see what needs put right before I can turn in. It's dark by the time I get the fire going and take inventory. The blankets hanging from the rafters look all right. No obvious mouse holes. And the layer of dust on top is still dust, which is good. The roof hasn't leaked. But I don't see the mattress up there. My gaze drops to the bed, to the mattress still lying on the frame. By lungus! My shoulders slump. No wonder the mice let the blankets be. I take a handful of grass from the mattress and give it a sniff. The stink of urine fills my nostrils. I wince and toss it into the fire. Great, mouse piss. Sighing, I drag the mattress outside to shake out the hay. It's my own fault. Dad told me to empty it last autumn. I don't remember why I didn't, but I didn't. And now I get to sleep on the floor as punishment. With the hay out, I run my fingers over the bag. A few holes, not too bad, but the stink. I toss it over a wee bush beside the door and head back inside. Hopefully, the night air will remedy that. We'll see. I leave the door open while I take the stools from the table and empty my pack. Dad says that's how the gods work. They don't punish us for every misstep. They just let us stew in our own haggis. It's only the truly wicked they deal with direct. I cut a bit of dried mutton from my supplies, take a pot from the shelf over the hearth, wipe it clean on my skirt, and squeeze a little water from my skin. Once it's on fire, I pull down the blankets one at a time and take them outside to shake clean. It won't be soft as hay, but for one night, I can manage. I don't sleep well. The bathy seems strange in the dark, full of odd noises. I wake before the sun and stumble out in the pre-dawn light to fetch the mattress. It's too dark inside to mend the holes, so I set one of the stools in the doorway and get to work. When I finish, I roll it up, stuff it in my pack along with the shears and a wee bit of dried mutton, take my staff and water skin, and head out to the pen.
Fadam be me fin!
The sheep baa in return. I count them all as they rush out, eager to be grazing. Not one is missing. Yawning, I leave the gate open and follow them out to pasture. I had hoped to shear at least a few this morning, but between the crick in my neck and my heavy eyelids, I think I best worry about getting the mattress filled instead. The sheep stop a little way before the burn and settle in to graze. I spot a patch of dried seed heads swaying in the breeze atop a low rise opposite the cliffs. I walk over, check to make certain the sheep are content, then kneel down, open my pack, and pull out the mattress and shears. The ground here is thin and rocky. The grass grew too quick. That's why it went to seed. Not good for grazing, but it has other uses. Smiling, I unroll the mattress and, using the shears, begin harvesting the dry stalks. The same grass Dad used to make my first doll back when I was a wee lass. I gather a handful and snip, remembering the way he screamed.
Ack! Come quick, Maggie! I've caught one of the fair folk!
I was so shocked I dropped my staff. Oh, don't let her get away! I ran as fast as I could through grass taller than me.
I didn't say it was a she.
He laughed.
Ouch! Hurry, Maggie! She's a biter, she is!
My heart pounded. He wasn't going to be able to hold her much longer. Hurry, make her grant you a wish! Dad howled in pain. The sound ripped through my chest like a dagger. Let her go! I screeched, tears already stinging my eyes.
She be getting loose,
he groaned. I burst through the grass like a charging ram. Don't you hurt my dad! I fell to my knees beside his hands, still cupped against the earth, holding the fairy fast. Or I'll smash you into pixie dust, I will!
No!
Dad gasped, eyes wide.
That won't work. We need to use magic.
All my strength vanished in a heartbeat. I don't know any. Dad winced as the fairy bit him again.
Aye, but I do. The old one taught me a spell to turn fair folk to straw.
I couldn't believe my ears. My dad talked to the old one. She taught him magic.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
His eyes narrowed.
No, repeat after me.
I laid my hands on his and closed my eyes, willing my spirit to aid his.
Little sprite of nasty bite,
he began. Little sprite of nasty bite, I whispered, and goosebumps prickled up my neck. The magic was working. Dad's voice deepened.
I turn you into stalk and straw.
We turn you into stalk and straw. I snuck a peek to see if my change damaged the spell, but Dad just smiled. Good.
All right.
His mouth quivered.
You best look. I don't have the stomach for it.
Nodding, I pulled Dad's fingers away one at a time until I could finally see the fairy, made of straw and tangled in the grass, obviously trying to get away when the spell took her. Oh! I pushed Dad's hands out of the way, snatched the little thing out of the grass, and cradled her to my chest. How long will she be like this, do you figure? She was so small, so pretty. Dad just smiled.
Forever, lass. Forever.
I stroked a finger down her featureless face. It wasn't fair. She couldn't help what she was. To go from sprite to straw, a lump caught in my throat. It wasn't right. I want to look after her. Dad's eyes took on a strange, sad-looking cast, despite the smile on his lips.
I think she'd like that. The fair folk are a lonesome lot. Living forever will do that. Mostly they just want a mate. But that lonesome ache settles deep down in their bones. They cannot bear the thought of being alone. And so, they do nasty things to make sure they ain't.
My lips pulled tight against my teeth. I didn't know much about the fair folk. But one thing I knew for certain, this one was never going to be alone again. I wish I knew her name. Dad shook his head.
You wouldn't have sued her now.
No, I suppose it wouldn't. But I thought I knew what would. I think I'll call her Ain. Dad laughed.
After the goddess?
He cupped his rough hand over my cheek.
I think that suits her very well.
I stuff one last handful of grass into the mattress, tie it shut, and drop the shears into my pack. I still have Ain back home, though. I stopped believing she was one of the fair folk ages ago. Pushing to my feet, I slide on my pack, toss the mattress over my shoulder, and turn around to check the sheep. They wandered off a wee bit, but not far. I toss a glance toward the bothy, wondering if it'd be a better idea to take the mattress back now or wait for sundown. Probably now. Sheep are silly creatures. They may not recognize me, or worse, take fright and scatter. I just tighten my grip, ready to move on, when a twinkle catches my eye. I glance up at the source, to the top of the cliff, right into the eyes of a beautiful black horse staring down at me. It shakes its mane. A shimmer of silver and blue circles its face, and I nearly drop my load. It's a nobleman's horse. It has to be to wear a bridle like that. Silver, set with jewels. Look at you. The words come as a whisper, but the horse stamps and tosses his head as if he heard me, as if it understood. I can't move. There's something captivating about him. His mane, his tail blowing in the wind, the way his muscles twitch as he trots back and forth along the edge of the cliff. Something that nearly steals my breath away. You're gorgeous, you are. He rises up on his hind end, paws at the air, then turns and gallops out of sight. I bite my lip, willing him to reappear. When he doesn't, I adjust my grip on the mattress and slump to the bothy. But what I can't figure is what a nobleman would be doing way out here in the highlands. There's no road for miles, no castle or manor. Doesn't make sense. I push open the door, stumble past the table, and flop the mattress down on the bed frame. Unless the Sutherlands didn't pay their dues. Shaking my head, I work the grass to the center of the bed. Now, if that were the case, the Lord wouldn't come himself. He'd send soldiers. And a smile prickles the corners of my mouth as I close the door and head back to the flock. Whoever the Lord is, he's lost his horse. I snort out a laugh. A lord on foot. The sheep raise their heads as I approach. A few bleat a greeting and go back to grazing. I glance up at the top of the cliff, but there's no sign of the horse. Sighing, I stroke the ears of one of the ewes as I pass, but my water skin's running low. It's time to head back to the burn for a refill. I kneel down beside the pool at the base of the waterfall and dip my skin beneath the surface. Clouds drift over the sun and the temperature drops. It's a welcome change, but too bad, too. The flock's calm, and I could have used a bath. But now, without the sun to dry me, I think I'd rather wait. Pulling my skin from the pool, I push the stopper into the opening and rise to my feet. Probably a good thing, too, knowing my luck. There I'd be, naked in the falls, and here'd come the nobleman looking for his horse. Or Seamus stinking lofty, I huff and jerk the strap over my head. It'd be just like him, too. I snatch up my staff and unwind the sling. He's always showing up in strange places. The mill, the tavern, wherever I go. Fishing a stone out of the pouch on my waist, I slip it into the sling, hook the loop over the end of my staff, and into the notch. He's got eyes for me, I know it. It wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't around here somewhere right now. At the thought, the hair on the back of my neck prickles. Someone is watching. I can feel it. Well, I'll give him something to watch. Seamus! I shout, and all the sheep raise their heads. If I catch you spying on me, I swear! I swing my staff overhead, hard and fast, just like Dad taught me. The strap whips free. The stone whistles through the air and crashes against the side of the cliff, exactly where I wanted it to. The sheep jolt back in a single mass, stop, turn, and snort. I slam the butt of my staff into the ground and toss my hair. See that you don't! That'll show him. A soft whinny pulls my gaze to the top of the cliff. Oh, I lower my staff. So it's you that's been watching me. His sleek black coat glistens even in the muted light of the fog. His dark eyes sparkle. Well, that's all right then, I sigh. If only he wasn't up there. If only it wasn't miles around. If the cliff wasn't so steep and tall. My chest aches. If only I could touch him. I don't know how long I stood there, him watching me watching him, but it's not enough. Eventually, the horse shakes his mane and trots back out of sight. I can't explain it, but when he goes, it's like he takes a bit of me with him. And when I lead the sheep back to the pen for the night, when I've eaten and fallen asleep on my bed of fresh-cut grass, it's him that haunts my dreams. The next morning, I start the shearing. It's not something the sheep are particularly thrilled about, but they're eager to be off grazing, and so I stand by the gate and only open it a smidge, enough for one sheep at a time to squeeze through. I let one ewe poke through, grab her wool with one hand as she tries to rush by, close the gate with the other, and get to work. Taking both legs on one side, I flip her over gently and straddle her head. Sheeps are silly creatures. Put them down on their sides, keep them from raising their heads, and they go as limp as an old rag, usually. This old gal gives a kick when I reach for the shears, but only one, and I've got the tip of the blade under her wool. I push forward and snip on the pull stroke, letting the skin that rose with the hair settle so she doesn't get nicked. Belly to back, flop the wool over, change sides, and let her go. I spread the fleece flat on the soft green grass and catch the next sheep. After helping Dad do a few last summer, it's a rhythm I know well, and as I work, I sing. The same song Dad sings to calm the sheep so they don't balk at the gate. I am the blast of the sea, the tidal wave, the thundering surf, the stag of seven tines. A prayer of sorts, a reminder that we are all part of the same world, that I am goddess to the sheep, just as I am sheep to the gods, and all are one, partners in the same dance. I stand, help the old ewe I was working on to her feet, and add her fleece to the pile, pausing to glance once more at the cliff. No horse. I sigh and head back to the gate, but as I swing it open, ready for the next ewe, I find the pen already empty. Blinking, I peer back at the pile of fleeces and shake my head. I hadn't planned on doing them all in one go. I thought I'd take my time, do a few each morning, but now? I shrug, kneel down beside the fleeces, and roll them into a loose wad to carry inside. Now I suppose it's time to comb it out. I push open the door with my foot, stop, and take one more look at the top of the cliff. The horse could come back any time, and I really shouldn't ignore that sheep long, not while they're grazing. I step inside and lay the fleeces on the table, stretch out my aching back, and sniff. The scent of lanolin, sheep dung, and sweat crashes in on me like a thunderbolt. Woof! Raising my hand to clear the stink, I hurry out the door. If Seamus could smell me now, I don't think he'd be so keen. I limp back to the pen to fetch my staff and pack. Another wave of stench assails me as I lift my pack over my shoulders. Ugh, Seamus or no, I really need a bath. My ass aches from bending over, so it takes longer than usual to reach the burn. The sheep follow along right to the banks and belly up to drink. I go upstream, to the pool below the waterfall. The cliffs close in a wee bit more, but I hardly call it private. Glancing back at the sheep, the grass waving in the breeze, and the top of the cliff, I prop my staff against the stone and drop my pack. There's no one here. I slip out of my boots, pull my dress over my head, and dip a toe into the water. A shiver ripples up my back, but it's not so bad. Carefully, I creep into the pool, wincing as each inch of dry skin meets the surface. Once I'm in, once my muscles relax, I lay back with a sigh and let the waterfall rain on my toes. But it's not just me that needs washing. Trying not to move more than I have to, I reach over, pull my dress into the pool, and slowly work the water through the fabric. There's no sunlight to dry it, but if I wring it out, it should wear dry by the time I reach the bathy. My hands slow as I lie there, watching the wisps of fog drift by, listening to the water spill down the rock face. My eyelids droop. Voices sing in the ring of the falls. Strange, laughing voices I can't quite understand. I take a deep breath. Water fills my throat and I jolt up coughing. Gods! I heave, gasping. That'd be me, all right. Drown in a pool no bigger than a water trough. I crawl onto the bank, still sputtering as I wring the water from my dress and give it a sniff. Better. I spread it out on a rock, glancing down the burn as I slip into my boots. But the sheep have moved on. I twist out my hair.
Bottom be me fiend!
No answer. Ugh, where'd you get off to now? I wasn't in there long. They can't be far. I grab my dress and force it over my head and arms. It sticks to my back, but I don't waste time working it down.
Faram be me fiend!
No answer. Snatching my staff, I run to the top of the nearest rise.
Faram be me fiend!
A loud, shrill bleat sounds from over the next hill. My heart leaps to my throat. Something's got one. Sprinting, I unwind the sling and fumble for a stone. My fingers close around a cold, smooth sphere just as the flock breaks the hill at a run. Full speed, eyes wide, they pour by me like water around a rock. Gaze fixed on the top of the hill, I make no move to stop them. They're running from something. Something giving chase. My hands shake as I hook the loop around the notch and slip a stone into its pouch. A wolf. It has to be. Nothing else would spook them so. Thunder rolls in the distance. The last sheep, the old ewe, races over the crest of the hill. I raise my staff, ready. A huge black shape jumps over the grass. My gut clenches. It's him. The horse. He reaches down and takes the old ewe in his teeth. Time jerks to a crawl. She screams, a shrill, piercing cry that stabs at my ears, flashes down my arms like lightning. He plucks her from the ground and gives her a toss. For a moment, her body hangs midair, kicking, screaming. Then I lose her behind the tall grass. A dull, hollow thud rips through my chest. My arm swings down on its own. The sling cracks. The stone whistles through the air. It hits the horse at the base of the neck, right between his front legs. His hide ripples around the stone. His back legs slide forward under him as he skids to a stop. Hands shaking, I reach for another stone. He drops back onto his forelegs and stands, eyes locked on mine. The stone slips through my fingers. Tingles prickle in my chest like fire, but I don't reach for it. Don't break eye contact. I squeak. Idiot. I can't show fear. Can't show weakness. Swallowing, I force my voice to steady. Go on, get! I level my staff at the horse's forehead, right at the sapphire stone in his bridle, doing my best to sound angry. Off with ya! He tosses his nose. Gods, my knees shake. He's not backing down. Get or I swear! Screaming, swinging my staff like a sword, I stagger charge the horse. He gives a high-pitched whinny, turns, and bolts over the hill and out of sight. My knees give way. The staff falls from my hands. I can't move. Can't catch my breath. He killed her. He killed the old you.
Faram be me fin.
I wheeze, eyes burning.
Faram be me fin.
Something rustles in the grass. I push aside the seed heads in front of me, and my heart cracks. It's her. So flat on her side, she may as well be invisible. Blood stains the wool in the middle of her back, but her eyes are open. Lump in my throat, I crawl over and press my ear to her chest. Her heart's racing, her breath too, but not halted or gurgling. I wipe my eyes on my sleeve and run my fingers over her wound. skin's broke, but it doesn't seem deep. And not too long, only about a finger length. I can sew that. I press harder. She bleats out a long, pitiful-sounding moan. My chin shakes. I'm sorry. I have to see if your back is... But I can't say it. I can't even think of putting her down. I probe the edges of her backbone. Nothing sharp. Nothing loose. The knot behind my nose breaks into tears. I cup her face in my palms and kiss her nose. It's fine. You're fine. But that horse is still out there. I roll the old ewe onto her belly and help her to her feet. I can't figure out how she got down. It's miles around, and I can't believe she jumped. Not that far. I take a few steps, glance back at the old ewe, and motion for her to follow. Farum bimi fim. She doesn't budge. All right. I sigh and scratch her behind the ears. But don't you be thinking I'll be doing this every day now. Careful as I can, I squat down beside her, put my hands under her neck and rump, and lift her over my head onto my shoulders. Oof. I groan as I struggle to my feet. Been eating well, have we? She soaks me with piss. Oh, that's nice. I growl, shoving a toe under my staff. I manage to lift it high enough to grab and call to the rest of the flock. Farum bimi fin, you thrice-cursed fleabags! So much for my bath. The fog thickens as we walk, and by the time we reach the pen, the rain begins to fall. I call the flock inside the pen and fasten the gate, everyone but the old ewe. Despite my aching back, I dare not put her in with the others. Not yet. Adjusting her weight on my shoulders, I wipe the rain from my eyes and stumble to the bathy. She doesn't move when I set her down just inside the door. Not even when I go find the sewing kit. She stands there watching me until I go and push the needle through her skin. Then she fights. I have to hold her neck between my knees to do the job, but it doesn't take long and she's back on my shoulders. A few minutes more and she's in the pen with the others. By then, of course, the rains come in full force. I stumble back inside, soaked to the bone, flop down on a stool, and stare at the cold hearth. So sore. So tired I can barely think. The last thing I want to be doing is starting a fire. A shiver trembles up my leg. I wipe a cold, wet finger under my nose and sniff. There's nothing for it. I can either sit here and catch cold or do what needs doing. I reach for the tinderbox beside me on the table. Pain stabs through my neck and down my shoulder, and my arm crashes to the table. Eyes burning, I hook my hand around the box, drag it off the edge of the table and onto my lap. Jaw clenched against the pain, I open the lid, but my hands aren't my own. They don't move, don't feel right. Like they're made of cloth, a rag doll's hands, overstuffed with grass. Pushing the tinder to one side, I pinch the flint between my thumb and forefinger. Pain flashes through my palm. I hiss, and the stone slips through my fingers. It clatters against the floor, but I can't make it out in the dark, not through the tears stinging my eyes. I wanted to make Dad proud. I thought I could do this. But I can't. I slump forward, face buried in my hands. I'm not strong enough. I wish I was. I wish the gods had made me a lad. Someone Dad could be proud of. Someone he could rely on. But I'm not. Deep moans rip from my gut, force me to my knees. I'm a failure. My arms fall limp against the floor. A complete failure. My little finger hits something loose. The flint. Sobbing, I take it in my palm. I don't belong here. I never did. I sit up, still heaving. Tomorrow I'll go find Seamus, ask him to look out for Dad's sheep. That's what I should have done straight away. I can still help Dad. I can still do the spinning. But I never should have tried to do this on my own. My breath calms, enough to gather a wad of tinder from the box. Of course, Seamus will take it that I fancy him, but there's nothing for it. I wad the tinder into a ball, fish the ring of iron from the bottom of the box, and feed my fingers into the loop. It's not about me. I strike it against the flint. A few small sparks trail bright between my knees. Another strike, and a handful of orange stars settle in the tinder. I lay the flint beside me on the floor, cup the wad between my hands, lift it over my head, and blow. Soft, long, and slow. The stars shine brighter. I blow again, harder. All at once, it bursts into flame. I drop it in the hearth and feed it small bits of grass, then sticks from the faggot leaning against the wall, never neglecting to blow. Not until all the bathy is filled with light. Then I lay down beside the fire to watch its dance, listening to its crackling voice, no longer alone, no longer weeping, but far from whole.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
No, I'm not what Dad deserves, but I'm all he's got. I toss another stick into the fire. I won't let him down, no matter what. A bang at the door jerks my head from the floor.
Is anyone there?
A man's voice calls. Blinking, I struggle to my feet. It's not Seamus. My gaze jumps from the door to my staff. It's not any voice I recognize. What do you want?
To get out of this wretched rain, you daft girl.
The voice snarls. I swallow hard. I don't know him. I can't figure what anyone would be doing out here in the rain. But I can't just leave him out there either. My gaze shifts from the staff to my pack. There's not enough room to swing my staff, but the shears. Give us a moment. I slip the shoes from my pack, slide back the latch, and open the door. The man steps in, shakes the water from his cloak, and peers at me from under his hood.
My thanks, girl. A man could drown in weather like this.
Shears hidden behind my back, I push the door closed. Well, you're in the dry now. Take off your cloak and warm yourself. The man nods.
Again, thank you.
He lowers his hood, sweeps the cloak from his shoulders, and drapes it over one of the stools. I start, but when he turns, words escape me. I don't know if it's the way his dark hair hangs over his shoulders, or how it frames his deep blue eyes in ebony, but something about him sends tickles all through my belly, something I've never felt before. I can't look away. Can't think. Faye, I can barely breathe. The corner of his lip curls into a smile. My knees quake. I manage to squeak out, Who are you then? But only in a whisper.
Forgive my appalling manners.
He bows slightly. A drop of water falls from the end of his hair, glides past his necklace, and trickles down his chest, vanishing beneath his half-open shirt, just above his navel. I watch it cleave to every valley, each muscle as it goes, transfixed.
Duke Kefeldirer, at your service, Mum.
Duke? My head spins. Then I force my gaze from his navel to his necklace. Sapphires, set in silver. Then it be your horse.
You've seen him then?
He interrupts.
Where? When?
Just the mention of the beast kills my tingles stone dead. It's his horse that attacked my sheep, that nearly killed the old ewe. Oh, I've seen the ugly brute. I snarl. Don't tell me you actually ride that thrice-cursed demon. His brow twists into a knot.
Demon?
Huh, demon. Pulse rising in my ears, I spit on the floor. Scattered me half sheep across the highlands, he did. Nearly bit my prize ewe in half, too. I jerk the shears from behind my back, level the tip at his nose, and squint down the handle. His eyes focus on the tip of the shears. He whispers a single word.
Iron.
The ball of his throat rises and falls.
It seems I owe you an apology. I didn't know he caused you such trouble.
He shuffles around to the door, eyes fixed on my shears, even as he fumbles for the latch.
The timing ain't right, but I'd like to make it up to you. I'll go and find him, and if I may, I'll be back tomorrow.
He finally manages to loose the latch. The door swings open and he backs out into the rain, eyes still fixed on my shears. Snatching his cloak, I toss it in his face. If I ever see that wretched beast again, I'll kill him. But seeing him out there, standing in the rain, that look on his face, I feel like such an ass. He's so handsome. And it's not his fault what his horse did. Not really. But I can't let him back in. Not now. So instead, I give my hair a toss, prop my hands on my hips, and stare down my nose at him. And if you do come back tomorrow, it best be with flowers. His lips squirm up at the corners, and he swings his cloak over his shoulders, eyes sparkling.
Aye, flowers it is then.
He bows.
Though I doubt I'll find any to compare with your beauty.
Tingles explode through my belly. They tingle up into my chest, down my arms and legs. He thinks I'm beautiful. A duke. I don't move, not until he turns to leave. Then, and only then, do I take the edge of the door in hand and swing it closed. But even then, not all the way. I watch him go, bottom lip between my teeth, wishing his cloak didn't hang so low. Imagining what could have been had I asked him to stay, if my fingers had traced the path of the water droplet, touched each ripple of his chest, caressed the curve of his shoulders, tasted the fullness of his lips. My whole body trembles. Then, half lost in fantasy, I watch his outline change, grow. I squint, trying to make out what's happening, but what I see makes no sense. He reaches twice the height of a man, then falls forward on all fours, except his arms don't look like arms anymore, more like legs. Horse legs. By Oberon! I gasp, unable to look away. His neck stretches, thickens. Ears sprout from the top of his head, and before I can draw another breath, he kicks up his hind legs and gallops out of sight. I slam the door shut, trembling, not sure what to think. But I can't stay here. Not anymore. I can't. I just can't. The Old One. A pinch of heather, a dash of salt. Keeping my gaze fixed on the cauldron, I stretch out my hand for the salt, but grasp only air. 'Tis strange for salt to sprout legs. I turn a wary eye toward the cat. Very strange indeed. She lifts her head, stretches out her front paws, raises her tail high, and yawns. Cackling, I scratch the base of her tail. A good ruse, but I need it back, Demona. She turns, rubs her cheek against my hand, and the salt reappears, bowl and all. Thank you, my pet. I cup her face between my fingers. Her thoughts purr in my head. A little slower. Her eyes close, but one ear turns toward the door. You have visitors coming. A man and... She sniffs. His daughter. I smell fear and confusion. One emerald eye cracks open. And a hint of magic. Is that so? I tap Demona's nose with my middle finger and shake the other sleeve down over my stump. This should prove interesting. The knock comes almost as soon as the words leave my mouth. Come! The man hobbles in on a crutch, so afraid to look me in the eye that he hits his head on the ward circlet hung over the door. It startles him so badly he nearly loses his balance. It's the girl that takes his elbow to steady him, glares at him, but with eyes brimming with worry and love, despite the harsh words tumbling from her lips.
Look where you're going! She won't turn you into a frog just for looking at her!
The scent of musty copper fills the air. The scent of magic. I lick my lips. It seems Demona was right, as usual. You have a tale to tell, don't you, dearie? Demona leaps from the workbench to the windowsill. Water and spirit, be mindful, she is under. She pauses, her tail twitches side to side.
No, not under. Touched by an enchantment,
she thinks to me. But one that will spread, I think.
You're not sure?
I smack my gums together. My, this is unusual. The girl stands on her tiptoes and whispers something into her father's ear. I don't catch it, but I can guess. She's mad, or something like that. Regardless, the father's face goes pale. He turns away, and I can't help but smile. He doesn't agree.
Mad, you say?
I stomp my foot. The girl freezes, still as stone.
Mad, yes. To walk with gods and demons, one must be a little mad,
I laugh. But enough of this. The smile fades as I point to the bench beside the door.
Came you for a reason, and I would hear it. Sit, both of you. Speak.
She helps her daughter with his leg, then settles down beside him. Only then does she seem to notice the trinkets all around her. The amulets hanging from the ceiling, dried sheep livers, the foot of a cockerel killed on a hanged man's grave, the ear of a woman who heard only lies. She sits up straight, eyes wide, and swallows.
Dad hurt his foot,
she mumbles.
Speak up,
I snarl and turn back to my work. I don't have time to coddle children.
Yes, Mum.
Her voice shakes. I take a handful of salt and toss it into the cauldron. A soft green light glows in its depths. I break off a section of mandrake root and stir it into the brew. She begins again, louder.
Dad hurt his foot, so I was to take the sheep to pasture alone. At first it all went well, but then this horse appeared on the high ground overlooking the dale. A big black horse and a silver bridle. Thought a noble got throat or what, 'twas such a grand beast.
I had a pinch of grave dust. Go on.
Well, the next day I did the shearing. I stank so bad after I went to bathe in the burn. That's when I heard the sheep screaming. I got dressed, grabbed my staff and came running. And it was that horse. He was attacking the sheep.
Her voice breaks.
I chased him off, but later this man came by the bathi claiming to be a count, wearing a necklace just like the horse's bridle.
Demona slinks across the windowsill to the girl's side.
Ah, Kelpie, is it?
Aye, it seems so.
I level a finger at the girl and she goes rigid.
Did you lie with him?
The man's jaw drops.
Now, just,
Silence,
I whisper. The room darkens. Answer me, girl. The girl trembles so badly. I'm not certain she can, but after a few blubbering attempts, she shakes her head.
Nay, m'lady, I threatened him with the shears and...
She takes a deep breath.
He turned into a horse and ran away.
I hobble over, bend low, and stare directly into her eyes.
You saw him turn?
Her whole face contorts as she struggles to maintain composure, but she can't hold back the tears.
Yes, Mum.
Iron,
I shout, and the girl jerks back as if struck.
Ha!
I turn my finger on Demona.
There's the answer to your riddle, pet. She be holding iron. Of course, Demona purrs. His enchantment was weakened by the iron in her hand. Well, there can be no doubt now.
She leaps onto the girl's lap.
It seems you've been given an extraordinary opportunity, apprentice.
That I have, and I know exactly what I'm going to do with it.
Girl, take my pet outside and wait for my call. Daddy and I need to have a little chat.
She nods, scoops up Demona, and hurries outside. I watch the door close behind her, wait a few moments, then turn my attention to the man. Impressive how much his girl loves him. A fine quality. I hobble back to my workbench.
A tale, a true tale,
I whisper. One of price and deeds to be. But first a question.
Why bring you her to me?
His face is a mask, but behind it, the man speaks.
I didn't know what else to do. Men turn into horses? Who'd have believed such a thing?
Fool. Men be men from birth to death, and nothing done can change that.
Leaning forward, I squint down at the jars lined along the back of the bench. Love potions, cough powders, luck drafts.
Now, where did you get to?
The shelf over the window, third flask from the right.
Demona's voice sings in my head. My gaze sweeps across the room.
Ah, yes, of course.
The man coughs. I pause and stare at him a moment. Then it hits me.
The girl.
Aye, that I can. But first the potion and the tale. I limp over to the window.
Long ago, a group of children playing by the burn spied a grand black horse.
I stretched out my hand toward the flask on the shelf.
A horse that wore a silver bridle set with precious stones. 'Twas so beautiful, so tame, standing there grazing by the water, that the youngest thought to pet its mane. The horse neither startled nor spooked nor took any notice at all. But no sooner had the boy touched the beast than he found he could not let go again.
Groaning, I managed to hook my fingers around the glass and tip it into my palm.
He screamed and the others come running. But the horse took no mind, not even when they took the boy by the arm and began to pull, only to become stuck themselves.
I shrink back to my feet, clutch the flask to my chest, and stop to catch my breath.
The eldest, a girl, thought to take the beast by the bridle.
I stretch out my other arm and shake the stump free of its sleeve.
But as soon as she gripped it, the horse threw its head up and ran full tilt toward the water. Panicked, unable to let go, she drew a skein dub from her sock and cut herself free.
My voice falters. It sounds so simple.
I cut myself free.
But it wasn't. I wanted to let go, but my fingers wouldn't obey. The horse tossed its head and my feet were torn from the ground. I couldn't tell my screams from the others. Everything was chaos. To this day, I don't know how I managed to draw Father's knife from my boot or when my wrist broke. All I remember clearly was hitting the ground so hard I couldn't breathe, lying there gasping, helpless, as the horse leapt into the river. My friends, every one of them, trailing behind like a banner, screaming. All of them drown when the horse vanished beneath the water. Gone in an instant, at least for a few days. When their intestines washed up along the shore of the burn, what the kelpie always leave uneaten. I don't know how long I stand there, staring at my stump. When I return to myself, the man is still there, eyes fixed on me.
"'Tis the kelpie that set me on my path," I croak. "Why I learned the art. Kelpies be shapeshifters, spirits of the water, Oberon's clan, and so iron their bane. They feed on human flesh, but their motives are not always such."
Leaping over to the man, I offer him a sad smile.
"Kelpie can't be mating with another of its kind, and so they take on human guys. That's what this one be doing. He meant to bewitch your daughter and mate with her, and he nearly succeeded. 'Tis only the iron in her hand that spared her, though the enchantment remains. Like a seed, it grows within her. In time, it will consume her. When that happens, she'll move heaven and earth to mate with him."
I pat his knee with my stump.
"And she'd be given birth to a foal? No human kin. She will not survive."
The man's left eye twitches, but he doesn't speak. I hold out the flask.
"I offer my heel and an aid, at a cost, but one you'll be happy to pay."
My eyes narrow as I infuse my next words with cold purpose.
"Bring to me his bridle. Once that be done, you'll be giving me your troth. Fasten your hand with mine, in marriage."
His face pales and a soft chuckle rumbles in my throat.
"It won't be a price he'll mind paying, once he hands me the bridle. Now, once I'm young again, he'll be keen indeed, I think. Regardless, he's only the means to an end. It's the girl I want." Such a strong will. Yes, she'll make a fine student.
Cold purpose. The miles pass quickly, far faster than they have in years, and I reached the Bothy sooner than I expected, despite the rain. Staff in hand, I scanned the open area between the pen and the Bothy, the tops of the cliffs. Only then, only when I know I'm alone, do I approach the pen. The old ewe pokes her head between the slats of the gates and lets out an impatient-sounding baa. Me chest relaxes, but only a bit. It's a good job Maggie left them in. I'd hate to have to tramp all over hither and yon to find them, not knowing when or where that kelpie creature might pounce. Shaking the hatter from me face, I squint up at the sun. It's nearly invisible behind the clouds, but right overhead. Plenty of time for grazing, I tell the old ewe. But the sound of my own voice sends a chill up me spine, one that lingers on even as I lift the catch and open the gate. All right, lassies. I swing me staff out toward the pasture, but not a one takes so much as a step. Ah, of course. Despite the knot in me stomach, I can't help but laugh. I'm not me. I'm Maggie. Barely, I need to call them like she does.
Faram be me fin.
The sheep bolt from the pen like a wave, but the sound of me singing brings a tear to me eye. Maggie doesn't sing anymore. Not for me. Not since her mother passed. Only the sheep. But she will today. Me chin quakes. All the songs I've missed the most. I hum to get the feel, and a moment later Maggie's smooth voice rings out across the highlands.
Nahiria is crunadon kahir, kwefitsi rith.
I toss me pack higher on me shoulders and follow the sheep. The words hold no comfort now.
When the old woman's pressed, she must run,
not knowing the price I meant to pay. Me hand in marriage to the old one. Me voice falls silent. At first, I don't understand why she would ask such a thing. But then I thought about how quiet things had been with Maggie gone to the sheep fields. How terribly alone I've been. It's not much to ask, to not have to live out one's final days alone. 'Tis a good price, an easy price to spare Maggie. A very good price. The day passes as most do in the highlands. Rain and fog, with no sight nor sound of this Duke Kefildurer. The sheep, for their part, give me no trouble at all. So little, in fact, that as the last ewe trots into the pen for the night, I can't help but wonder if I'd be better off looking like Maggie every time we move to summer pasture. I take up my staff, but me arms can barely lift it. A dull ache settles in me back and me feet. Well, it's like walking barefoot on sharp rocks. By the time I make it to the boat and drop me back on the stool, it's all I can do to start the fire. I flop down on me backside, blink up at the pile of wool she laid on the table and snort. That girl! Being in her form, I now know how hard it was for her just to do the normal work. But to shear the sheep too? Alone? Tears burn me eyes. The girl's heart is stone, bloody iron. Somehow I managed to push myself to my feet, put water in the kettle and set it to the fire. I pull the combs from their place above the hearth and almost fall onto the empty stool. The last thing I want to be doing is more work, but I know Maggie. She never sits idle. What I didn't know is the price she paid, how much she pushed to keep pace with me. I rip a handful of wool from the pile, press it into one of the combs, and draw the other across the ball, pulling out the fiber. Well, no more. Things are going to be different now. Happier. I swear it. A knock at the door sends shockwaves down me spine.
Yes?
Maggie's voice calls when I answer.
Who's there?
'Tis I, my love. Come to be with you. Me eye twitches. Me love?
As I understood it, he didn't leave on the best of terms. Ach, of course, the enchantment. He must figure by now she'd be completely smitten. An idea squirms up the back of me head, one that steals the moisture from me tongue. But I know how I'm going to get that bridle now. God's help me. Dropping the combs, I rush to the door. At last, I toss back the bolt and fall into his arms.
I feared you may never return.
We need never be parted again. He draws me close, presses his lips to mine, to Maggie's, winds his fingers through me hair. I've never kissed a man before. His rough chin and cheeks scrape me soft skin, but his lips move like water against mine, cool and yielding. It's not at all what I expected. Strange to be sure, but not altogether as revolting as I feared. Not to the point where I can't hide me revulsion. I slip my hands around his back, press my body against him. With one hand, I stroke his shoulder blade and fan the other across the back of his head. His lips pull away, but it's too soon. I halt his retreat with a gentle nip and slide me tongue between his lips, praying to whatever God put me here to erase it from my memory. He groans and pulls me tight against him, his tongue moving with mine. My stomach churns, but I moan in response, rake my fingernails down the back of his neck. Hooking a finger on his necklace, I manage to loose the latch and grab hold. He pushes me away, but it's too late. His necklace, his bridle slips from his neck. His eyes go wild. You don't know what you're doing. Fur sprouts from his cheeks. Give it back. He lunges at the necklace, but his fingers melt into his palms, hardened to hooves.
Don't I?
I step back laughing, holding the necklace high.
This be your connection to the flow of magic, eye.
I glance up at the stone glistening in the firelight.
You meant it to make a mirror of me, you did. Be the death of me.
He fell forward, no longer solid, but water only.
Looks like you're going back to Oberon, Kelpie. Good riddance.
Without warning, he turns and bolts out into the night. I watch his outline fade into the darkness, bolt the door, and rest my head against the wood. Eyes closed, panting. But it went well, I think. The old one's plan worked. It's over. The necklace pulses in my hand. I open my eyes, run its smooth silver links between my fingers. His connection to the flow of magic, the old one said. I sniff, tuck it in me back, and take a long draft of water to rinse the taste of him from my mouth. Then try to get back to combing out the wool. Anything to chase what I did from my mind. It isn't that hard, in truth. I can't stop thinking about that necklace. About magic and the old one. I don't know much about such things, but unless I miss my guess, I'm about to be married to someone very powerful. I flop down on the stool, grab a comb full of wool, and a queer sort of sensation washes over me. I'm to be married. To a witch. And I don't really know anything much about her.
I hope you enjoyed Faram Bimi Finn, as written by Dirk Stevens and performed by Paul J. McSorley and Melissa Medina. Author Dirk Stevens is a figment of your imagination, more at home wandering the dreams and fantasies of men than the mundane lands of the real. He serves as an intermediary only, writing the stories of those whose consciousness allow him entrance. On to the shows. We have Scary Stories Told in the Dark airing twice a week. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartlands archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Speaking of Fear from the Heartland, let us be a part of your spooky season. The horror never has to end. Check out episode 18.5 of season 3 featuring the story, The Last Bride,
to soak up some of that good old Halloween spirit. You won't be sorry that you did. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.